Welcome to Be the Wave of Change. This is a 7-session course, and this is session 1. It's my very great pleasure and privilege to participate with you in this course. This is a very distinct course for me in that every other course I essentially teach is based on my already embodied wisdom, so I speak from a real depth of knowledge and passion and conviction about its value. There's something a little bit different with Be the Wave of Change in that it's based on one of 8 books I've written, but it was written as sort of a forecasting of what is in process of happening with humanity. And so those of us who are live in this course are actually in the wave of people who are prototyping this shift in humanity. And that's going to become a lot clearer as we go through the session this evening. What do I mean by that? So I'd like to give you a very brief bio, a bit of an intro as to who I am, so you've got a bit of context of where I come from in presenting this material to you, and then we'll launch really deep into the richness of what we're going to explore and share together tonight. So essentially, my name is Ariel Kali, and I'm a global visionary, an executive life and leadership coach, very passionate about facilitating deep transformational processes through retreats and workshops and seminars. As you know, I'm a telecourse leader, I'm a healer in various ways. Occasionally I teach yoga and meditation out of my practice of about 38 years now. I'm a dancer, I'm a choreographer, and I'm author of 8 books, essentially on self-realization and planetary evolution and personal leadership, and especially about regaining respect for ourselves and all life. My own life story is very eclectic. I'll give you just a couple touchstones. Some of them you might relate to, some of them you may not. Initially, I'm a performing athlete. I trained with the Royal Winnipeg Ballet and toured internationally with 2 successive classically based contemporary dance companies. Then I had what some would call an accident, which was actually no accident in the end. It was really the beginning of my deep, profound awakening to human consciousness, planetary evolution, and all such big concepts as that. Out of that accident in which I fractured a knee and hand, I actually healed that completely within 9 months, and I leapt over the company dance scene and entered the stage solo, which is exceptionally rare. I toured solo for a year in 1989, and then an inner voice called me to let go dance. There was something else I needed to apply myself to, and I heeded it. That led me into what I call seclusion, a phase of time that was forecasted by a vision I had when I was 10 years old. And I spent a period of time, 7.5 months, essentially out of contact with humanity so I could go very deep into meditation. I scribed my first book during that phase of time. When I came out of that, my next sort of calling was to participate live in the inaugural United Nations Earth Summit Conference that happened in Brazil in June 1992. When I came back home to Canada, to Vancouver, where I was living, it was quite surprising to me that no one locally was hosting a post-Earth Summit conference. And so I realized, well, I guess it's me. So that's the first conference that I convened, and that led to the first nonprofit society I co-founded. The story goes on. I went overseas for almost a decade, was based in England and India. Met personally with the Dalai Lama and some of his advisors and some other global leaders to discuss, for simplicity, what I call a new model of exemplary global leadership. Just a simple way to describe something pretty intricate and inspiring. From that, I came back to Canada, met my beloved, founded my first corporate consulting practice where I was assisting executives to clarify vision, mission, core values, and in-house in companies custom designing wellness programs. And my sort of private tagline was bringing spirit into the concrete world. Shortly after that, it was time to dance again. After a 14-year temporary retirement, I returned to the stage and toured solo for 3 years at the age of 40. Then it was time to birth books. And my partner and I started to author some of the wisdom that had been flowing through us. And we birthed 4 books simultaneously and a number since then. The retreats began in Canada. I'd led retreats in the UK and Wales in the 90s. Retreats began in Canada in 2008, based on a couple of the books, very profound transformational retreats. Some of the people in the live call tonight were present in those retreats and very instrumental in the evolution of them. And then back in about 2009, I scribed the second most recent book I've written, which was called The Ego and the Soul, Living and Leading from the Inside Out, A Map for Humanity's Ultimate Thrival. And it's the front end, the first sort of very deep preamble of that book that this course is based upon. Just one last thing in the bio is I'm joyously returning to the stage again this summer at the age of 52 for my 25th anniversary of solo dance touring. So quite the lark. Anyway, there's a little bit about me just so you get a sense of who it is who's your guide in this incredible journey that we're going through in the next number of weeks. So my intention in this first session of Be the Wave of Change is quite literally to pass into your hands a map to end suffering, yours and humanity's. It is to assist you personally to actively, keenly begin to identify when your ego is predominant and when your soul is predominant. And semantics, I use these words, they're the simplest I have to convey wisdom through the book and this course. If ego or soul or any other words I use kind of grate against you, please either let me know or take a moment to find the word that fits for you. Semantics, it's just the meaning we attribute to words. I could interchange these words with others, so they're my working vocabulary, but it's quite flexible. As you begin to master the awareness of when your ego is predominant and your soul is predominant, and this is going to make a whole lot of sense tonight and in subsequent sessions, you'll naturally be in a position to lift your ego up to a higher, more inclusive vantage to that of your soul, your eternal self, from which suffering diminishes and wellness, relaxation, confidence, resilience, constructive engagement, and co-creative ability begin. Our session this evening is going to be highly kinesthetic, inner visual, and immediately embodied by you to ensure your immediate action towards your own reabsorption of your ego into your soul. And that language is going to recur throughout this course, and it's going to make so much sense to you what I mean by it. So let's begin. A first question I'd like to ask you to reflect on is, what drew you to participate in this course and this class tonight? On some level, a light went on, you felt compelled to be here. Do you have conscious awareness? Some of you do, I know. Some of you may, with provocation with my question. What is it that you're seeking to find or to gain through presence, through participation in this course? And by the way, anytime I ask a question tonight and in future sessions, if you feel really inspired to respond verbally, if you're on the live call, please unmute yourself, press star 6, so that we can hear your response. In other words, just take my question in and allow it to evoke clarity for you. So before we get into the real richness of our time together this evening, I'd like to assist you to become as open and available and relaxed as possible so you can truly ponder the concepts I'm about to share with you. And one of my simplest ways of guiding myself and you to do this is essentially, and for those of you who've been experiencing the meditation course and courses that I've recently designed, I call this basic meditation or part of the basic meditation. So with that suggestion, some of you are already into the mode of it, I'm quite sure. So essentially, I'm going to assume you're sitting. If you're in a different body position, please adapt. And allow yourself to check to make sure your limbs are uncrossed. Unless you're sitting in a yogic cross-legged position, check to see that your limbs are uncrossed, your legs and your arms are uncrossed. And then simply focus on your pelvis and allow it to drop. You might imagine it's like a pebble in a pond. You're dropping the pebble into the pond. You're letting the pebble free fall through the water to the base of the pond, letting your pelvis simply drop. And as you let your pelvis drop, let it free fall, just allow it to drop, allow it to fall, you might notice a couple of things. One is that your breath is dropping deeper into your body, towards or into your pelvis. There's a direct correlation between your pelvis and your breath. When you drop your pelvis, it immediately invites your breath deeper into your body. And already I'm sure you're noticing the well-being effects simply of that. And if you choose to pay attention, you might notice that your legs are beginning to dangle from your hip sockets. There's no work for your legs to do. They're completely free of work, of labor. They can completely deeply relax. And so they can just sort of dangle from your hip sockets. And your arms, so akin, like cousins or siblings to your legs, they go, oh yes, I can dangle too. We can dangle from the shoulder sockets. So your legs and your arms are just freely dangling from the sockets. Kind of like a Raggedy Ann or Raggedy Andy doll. And if there's any degree of some kind of slumping or slouching in your body, easy to remedy. Just imagine that your skull is like a helium balloon and you're allowing it to float up into the sky. So with that, dropping the pelvis down, floating the skull up, those are your two key focus points. Drop the pelvis down, float the skull up. You're elongating the spine without effort. You're expanding the entire territory of the organs. You're allowing the lungs and the belly freedom to expand and contract. You're creating an optimal state of well-being simply by dropping your pelvis and floating your skull. That simple. You're shifting your state of being. That simple. So I'm going to ask you a series of questions just to begin to set the context of this course, Be the Wave of Change. Tonight we're going to explore context and then begin to go into some beautiful content. So as I ask you these questions, please simply reflect on them. They're seed questions, planting a seed inside of you. And allow them to affect deep clarity within you, immediate and perhaps over time. Do you ever feel overwhelmed by the current state of the world? Do you ever find yourself overwhelmed by your own state of affairs? Do you ever find yourself absolutely paralyzed by your reaction to someone or something in your own life? Perhaps disempowered and unclear about what to do in response? Do you ever have moments when you feel like giving up? On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being low and 10 being high, what is your current faith, your confidence, that as humans we will resolve our current crises of, to name a few, climate and economy and disease and war, poverty, hunger, homelessness, and beyond? Listen deeply for your answer. Would you like to experience the relief of accessing and harnessing your own powerful energy, your clarity, and your ability to respond constructively, actually affecting shifts out of suffering and into peace and ease, thus exponentially increasing your faith factor? Would you like to spend more of your life in joy and confidence? Would you like to spend less of it in suffering and in a muted potential? Would you like to feel, and I'm making the assumption through these questions just for the purpose of asking them, that you don't to the degree you want to. If you do, just let the questions ride past you. Would you like to feel that you are genuinely making a difference in shifting humanity to a higher, more integrative level of civilization? This is precisely what this 7-session course, Be the Wave of Change, is about. For change is at the root of suffering for the majority of people. If you want to become more masterful at navigating the waves of accelerating change and doing this with grace and ease, you're in the right place, at the right time, here now, and welcome. What if you could possess a single magic key that transforms change into a gift? What if you could be 100% confident in your ability to ensure your own well-being beyond mere survival, and thus free tremendous amounts of your energy to teach others how to do this too? What if you could be an agent of peace, someone who demonstrates to others how to walk right out of their fear, out into their confidence, effectiveness, and joy? What if you could free yourself forever from suffering and dedicate your energy instead to the healing, the peace of humanity in the world? There is a map, a very simple one. And in the 7-session course, I'm going to share my version of it with you. And I'm going to teach you how to use it. This 7-session course is based on part one, Revealing the Shift, from my relatively recently released book, The Ego and the Soul, A Map for Humanity's Ultimate Thrival, Living and Leading from the Inside Out. I want to thank you again for this precious opportunity of sharing and exploring these transformative concepts and tools with you. Can you imagine how different your life will be when you no longer suffer? In the Hope Retreats that I led in the year 2008, one of the first questions that came intuitively out of me in the first evening of a 3.5-day residential retreat was, "When did you sign a contract to suffer?" It's an assumption that many of us live by in being born into our culture, our global civilization, that suffering is an endemic, it's a necessary part of the human condition, the human experience. And I ask you to ponder this question, when did you sign a contract to suffer? Is it truly essential? Can you imagine how different your life will be or could be or can be when you no longer suffer? When you're no longer afraid? When you never again experience confusion? As I ask you these questions, what are you noticing? Can you imagine, and keep pondering the questions I've just asked, stay with them if they're still really richly informing you, and if you naturally begin to listen to my next questions, come with me with these. Can you imagine how different your life can be when you step into this newfound clarity, confidence, and power to affect positive change in your own life and thus beyond you? How will you feel? How will your life look? What does it sound like? So you may be getting a sense that I'm asking some pretty deep and profound and evoking questions. And my suggestion is we're going to have a very mind-expanding session tonight, full of valuable insights and tools that you can apply right away from this evening onward to step into your clarity, confidence, and power to create change that effectively moves you towards the end of an experience of suffering. And it's a paradigm that very few of us on a cognitive level can even comprehend. That's why I say we're mapping it. We're literally, this is my loving word, prototyping it in your life and on the planet. So let's begin. Let's go deeper. I'd like to share with you more context of what we're exploring in this 7-session series. What happens when you combine Einstein and Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr.? You get a powerful beginning model of the potential of the new human. I'll explain this as we proceed. Let's talk about change. Without getting mired into the details or the drama of your own personal story, what I sometimes call wallowing, can you please notice what aspects of change in your personal world are currently directly affecting you? Some possibilities are climate change, economic volatility, health, technologies. What elements of change are you feeling personally directly impacted by? The pace of all the new things you feel you need to or are expected to adapt to, simply the pace of change perhaps? And in these moments, if you've got pen and paper and choose to journal, to scribe in response to some of the questions I'm asking, if any of you choose to vocally share, feel free to. Naming these elements of change that you're feeling personally directly impacted by without telling a story about them. What is your personal inventory, your change inventory? Take a moment to consider these, write them if you choose to. Now, as you reflect back in your life, was it easier for you to respond effectively to change in the past than it is now? Perhaps easier now than it was in the past? And if so, why was it more difficult now? Just asking questions, just to stir your imagination, stir your insight. When I was in high school, I read a book that immediately became a milestone in my life. Have you ever read Future Shock by Alvin Toffler? In Future Shock, Toffler coins the term the acceleration of change. And he predicts that change will continue to accelerate at exponentially increasing rates. I read this in the mid-late 1970s. And already then, and the book was I don't know how many years old already, Toffler was cluing into it. He knew change accelerates exponentially. One of the chapters I remember reading, he referenced, even thinking back to the time of our grandparents, and mine were born around the turn of the century, the last century, how much change had happened by the time they had become my grandparents since the beginning of their lives. And then think even in the last generation or two, how much change is accelerating, and technology that we as adults have no clue even what's out there, some of us, because it's just changing, it's evolving so fast. That's just technology. So the subtext of the acceleration of change and the exponentially increasing rates of change is that if we don't become resilient and constructively responsive to change, if we are rigid and obstinate and arrogant and unwilling, we will snap. There's somebody on the line who's not muted their line, so if you know that it's you and you're willing to take a moment to press *6, it'll be a much softer listening experience for some other people who are in deep reflection. So if that speaks to you, if you take a moment please to *6 on your phone to mute, that would be great. I'm about to share with you some even deeper and richer wisdom. I'm going to take you on a little journey here. So just continuing to relax your body, let that pebble of the pelvis drop into the pond beneath you, so to speak. Let your skull gently float upwards. Perhaps stretch out, perhaps lean back. Take a few deep, slow, luxurious breaths. And if they haven't already done so, or they're doing at intervals, feel free to allow your eyes to close if they choose to, so that you can listen very deeply and allow insights to be evoked. Notice what resonates within you as truth, we might say, in what I say, what stirs you. Notice what ignites your passion. Just notice. And if anything I share doesn't resonate for you, throw it off. Please don't absorb it, don't take it in, simply because I'm suggesting it. Use my ideas as provocation, evocation, affirmation perhaps, or to stir you to ponder things on a deeper level. In my recently released book, The Ego and the Soul, A Map for Humanity's Ultimate Thrival, and in this 7-session course, which is based on the opening chapters in that book, we're going to explore a refreshing new concept. We're going to discover that it is our ego that is responsible for our physical and our mental survival, our well-being, and thus for how we respond to change, how we adapt. What you'll discover through this course and reading the book if you choose to is that I'm by far not an ego basher. I recognize ego's purpose, and we discuss that in this course, and the mapping, the new map for ego is to actually reabsorb it, not to throw it out. In this course, we'll discover something mind-blowing. That there was what I call a first commission or a first model of ego, a first purpose it was given when it was created. We'll go into that very deeply in subsequent sessions. This was solely to ensure our physical and our mental survival in the physical realms of space and time. How this first commission or model one of ego was designed worked sufficiently well when change was relatively slow, and that is key. The first model of ego worked just fine for a very long time, millennia, whilst change was relatively slow. It worked quite fine as humans evolved to who and where we are until recently. Who and where we were maybe about 20 years ago, we could backdate it longer than that, but ego really got into a squeeze 20, 30 years ago, when the speed of change shot right off the map. Now, what I'm going to call Ego Commission 1, Round 1, Model 1, Ego Commission 1 cannot keep up. It's panicking. It feels fearful. It's confused. It has no clue where or what to turn to assist it. For it perceives itself to be separate, to be alone. Which is why so many of us at times can feel scared, confused, betrayed, and uncertain about our present and about our future. It is because our ego commission one doesn't have the tools or the vantage to guide us successfully in this accelerating change. And here is my premise, my thesis, you might say. Ego needs a reboot, a retrofit, an upgrade, a repurposing. This is not about kicking it out, annihilating it. It is completely about giving it the tools it needs to serve us in the way it was designed. It needs to receive its commission too, its model too. Its brand new inclusive vantage, complete with powerful and effective new tools and capabilities. Abilities that will allow us to relax in ease and confidence, knowing how to ensure our personal well-being and the well-being of our societies and our planet. Ego needs to receive its commission to upgrade. In this 7-session course, I'm going to share with you precisely what this commission to is. And far more importantly, I'm going to assist your ego and mine to make this shift, setting down with reverence and gratitude its commission one antiquity, and picking up its new commission two, resilience and splendor and confidence. In participating in this 7 sessions, you are choosing to own your very own commission to capable, confident ego. Let's look at this more deeply. Commission one humans, basically every human being currently alive on this planet, is functioning from an operating system that has the capacity to be based in fear. This capacity hooks us from time to time, for some people, most of the time, continuously in the realms of duality and thus of suffering. Suffering can only exist in a state of opposites. Our energy is thus constantly being dedicated to resisting this downward spiral, catching fleeting glimpses of joy, freedom, and connection. For simplicity of language, this is what we'll refer to as hell. And words are interchangeable. Just for simplicity, I'm going to use the word hell. In commission two, ego, which you will touch into and begin to experience yourself in this 7-session course, you will learn how to effectively shift your operating system, just like the foundational hardwiring of a computer, from fear to vantage, confidence, and love. You will overcome the downward pull of hell, and you will enter the upward spiraling updraft of love, peace, joy, and beyond. And it will not be by chance. You will learn how to do it intentionally. You will eventually, with dedicated commitment, become, over time, immune to suffering. It will be a relic in the past, hard to comprehend and true. Your new world, your new life, will be based in commission two, upward spiraling freedom. This is a bit of a facetious question to ask you, but do you want this? If you truly have a choice of spiraling around in downward spiraling states of fear and confusion and suffering and pain and ambiguity and etc., would you choose that if you had an option? How is this possible? How can I be so grandiose in suggesting that it is actually possible to exit suffering? There are 3 key steps, and we're going to explore them fully and deeply in this 7-session course. The first step, and they're all so simple in principle, the first step, what I call the 3 keys, the first step is to teach your ego how to recognize your soul and how to orient yourself so that your ego is orienting to your soul. And again, these words are interchangeable. It's just for the purpose of expedient communication. You teach your ego how to recognize your soul and orient itself toward it. Number 1. Number 2, You release your undigested past, that which has the magnetic potential to pull you over and over and over again into hell. And three, you climb the ladder of consciousness such that hell no longer has access to you. You essentially become immune to it. And in its place, you experience with increasing frequency what I call the incredible lightness of being, which is unity beyond suffering. This is an entirely new paradigm of reality, of existence. And you are being born into it now. You're literally walking into this new existence through this course. Anyone, this is my very strong premise, anyone can learn these three steps. No one is exempt. Anyone with enough dedication, determination, and expert support can leave behind the tortures of what we're simply calling hell and live in the exquisite beauty and radiance and resplendence of what is referred to as heaven. And yeah, these are biblical terms. We could use any words. It's opposites, glory. This is not reserved for sages, although sages have been imploring to us for millennia that heaven is before us, in us. We need merely to choose it and to step into it. Heaven on earth now. Heaven is essentially freedom from suffering. It is accessing and living in your pure potential, you, me, all of us. It is becoming the new human, literally an evolutionary leap in the human species. It is living in ego's commission too. Let's just take a breath for a moment, because we've already explored some pretty powerful concepts that may be rattling our cages a little bit. And in a moment, take a drink of water if you choose, stretch your limbs. In a moment, I'm going to share with you some more context that is going to allow all of this to hang together nice and easily for you. No big stretch. So let's talk about Darwin for a moment. Charles Darwin recognized, through his intent and passionate observations of the natural world, the principle of the survival of the fittest. He realized that the species that survive are those that adapt most effectively to changes, such as changes in climate, or interspecies dynamics, or resource availability and the like. Those species that don't adapt well eventually become extinct. You may be focusing primarily in your life and in the context of this course on your own personal survival, or you may have enough energy available to be concerned and curious about humanity's survival and what I call thrival as a species. Or perhaps you're at a point somewhere in between the two, given the moment. These are all connected. Ultimately, your survival, my survival, humanity's survival are one and the same. Let's define the word adapt. It is different, starkly different from the word acclimate. When we adapt, we evolve. We become more than, different than, what we were. We become able to respond to the newness, the change, which is our ever-evolving reality. There is not even a moment in experience where change of some sort is not happening. The light is changing as the sun makes its journey through the day. The temperature is changing as a result of that. Whether the neighbors are making sound with their cars or their children or their sawing of trees or whatever changes nanosecond to nanosecond. Our degree of hunger or satiation changes, hydration or thirst. Just as examples, there is constant change on micro and macro levels in and around us all the time. When we become more than what was before, we evolve. We become able to respond to the newness, the change, which is our ever-evolving reality. The danger to us is not in us adapting, it is in us acclimating. To acclimate is to normalize something that is detrimental to our well-being. It is to not change ourselves in constructive response to something which is a threat to our well-being. I'd like to tell you a story to illustrate this. I first heard this recounted by Dr. David Suzuki, whom I had the great privilege to be present with at the UN Earth Summit Conference in Brazil in 1992. And I remember very clearly an analogy he shared, and I'd like to share it with you. I call it the frog. Imagine there's a beaker of boiling water and a frog, and someone drops the frog into the beaker of boiling water. Well, of course the frog jumps out. It's boiling. Now imagine a beaker of lukewarm water, room temperature water, frog temperature water, and dropping a frog into that room temperature, frog temperature beaker. Ah, the frog is comfy. And what if the water is gradually heated? No, it acclimates, it's still comfy. What happens when the water eventually boils? The frog is acclimated to the gradual increase of temperature and eventually pop, splat. The frog explodes. The frog is a tragic story of acclimating. We must be very, very sure that we are not defaulting to this, that we are not becoming our version of the frog individually and collectively. Evidence of our non-responsive, numb, distracted behavior suggests that we very much are. What then does adapting look like in counterpoint to acclimating? Close your eyes for a moment if they aren't already and imagine this. Adapting is becoming resilient, fearless, open to and curious about change, being creative and confident, and wondrous like a child in the presence of newness and possibilities. It is being innovative and adventurous and willing and bold and energized. It is being courageous and cooperative, investing ourselves in new prototypes. It is truly evolving, transforming ourselves with the times. It is not holding on to what we have and to who we currently are. It is becoming something, someone, new. It is being ultimately flexible. The Wright brothers are a classic example of prototyping, of experimenting, of seeking and discovering something new. They had a vision and a passion, and they put this to creative work. They wholeheartedly immersed themselves in evolving human locomotion. They demonstrated to us how a silver bird can fly. They invented airplanes. They lifted us from a two-legged that could walk or be transported via wheels, cars, trains, bicycles, and they gave us our very first looking down from up vantage as birds see land. Imagine this. Whether you think of yourself in a plane or as a bird, looking down from up. The Wright brothers gave us the experience of flight. They prototyped a paradigm shift, a quantum leap in the human being's experience. They gave us the new opportunity of being in the air, no longer shackled to the water or to land. They blew open our perception of the world and of our experiences of ourselves. Two brothers and their avid supporters did this. Gandhi approached his life in a similar way. He lived his entire life, every facet of it, as an experiment. He himself was the laboratory in which he delved in and he explored. And as he discovered, he modeled to us and he showed us how to affect actual benevolent change. He led 400 million Indians to reclaim their sovereign power and to self-govern. He did this, and he did much more. So Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr., as examples, and others, were early pioneers in the laboratory, what I call the PhD thesis inquiry, of discovering what are the steps to actually end suffering. We could go back to Jesus and Buddha and other great masters, all of whom have incredibly contributed to exploring and discovering what are the steps to actually end suffering. And this is where the seven-session course picks up in current time. We, those of us who are participating in this course, are literally actively exploring together and mapping how to affect a quantum shift in how our egos lead us, how they influence us to make choices, to respond to stimuli, to engage with the challenges and the opportunities that surround us. In my view, if we don't successfully prototype the shift from Ego Commission 1, hell-oriented, to Ego Commission 2, living in and demonstrating heaven, it is possible the entire human species may perish. In my view, it's the shift of the upshift of ego that is the pivot point in our survival and thrival. Where does Einstein fit into this equation? And I'm just voicing, you know, I'm just exploring with you Darwin and Wright brothers and Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. and Einstein because they're incredible reference points. They help us get bearings, which is very much a part of ego's job, by the way. Where does Einstein fit into this equation? In his paramount genius, he knew this. We can't solve problems, and I'm quoting him, we can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them. What was he actually saying? What was he pointing us to? What was he trying to explain to us to help us understand? His message was precisely what Gandhi was experimenting with and successfully demonstrating to us. In Gandhi's example, he realized that responding to violence with violence, as an example, will only compound and increase violence. It will not stop it. It will not resolve it. It will not bring about the desired resolution of peace. What it will create is more war and more suffering. Well, what does this have to do with us now, individually and as a species? We are currently locked in a way of thinking that entices us to respond to crises and to challenges on the same level that they exist. Simply because what exists is familiar to us, familiar to ego. And so it is what we perpetually default to. Let's contemplate this again. This is so huge. In principle, we are currently locked into a way of thinking that entices us to respond to crises and to challenges on the same level that they exist. Simply because what exists is familiar to us on an ego level, and so it is what we perpetually default to until we intercept that pattern and give our ego an alternative. Let's illustrate this visually, viscerally, kinesthetically. So I'm actually going to ask you to use your hands for the next few moments to create a physical kinesthetic model. Not just visualizing, not just taking in auditorially what I'm suggesting and sharing with you, but physically, kinesthetically. So take a moment, stretch if you need to, and make your two hands available, please. I'm going to guide you to create two kinesthetic models to illustrate what we are essentially talking about. The first I call the wheel. So would you please lift one of your hands in the air? We're going to use the non-dominant hand, your non-writing, non-drawing hand first. And with that hand, maybe with your thumb and your pointer finger and your middle finger, would you please mark a dot in the space directly in front of you? So your non-dominant, non-drawing, non-writing hand is marking a dot in the space directly in front of you. And then your other hand, your writing or drawing hand, your dominant hand, would you lift it parallel, so horizontal width, your dot hand, and move it towards the dot until you intersect that dot. So the hands come touching. You're intersecting the dot. And if you could pass the moving hand through the stationary dot, you would. So butt into it, so to speak, and go through it. And then the moving hand, I'll repeat this again for anyone who's confused, drop the moving hand down, around, and up, creating a circle, a wheel. Until you come and butt into that dot again and drop that hand down and around and up, creating a circle, and butt into that dot again, bang into it and down, around and up, until you bang into it and down, around and up. It's not very pleasant, is it? bang into it. It's like a broken record, and down and around and up. Shake out your hands. That's a not very pleasant model. It's a model of essentially what we're doing in our society. This is how we typically respond to challenges and crises and anything that beckons our attention when we meet it on the level it exists. And thus we keep circling around incessantly in the wheel of time, suffering, what the Buddhists call samsara. This is what ego, untrained, repeatedly does when it's locked in its commission one, its original identity. Now let's illustrate kinesthetically what we're moving into. I call this the spiral. Would you please shake out your hands if you need to give them more of a rest, your arms. We're going to create a model of our new identity. So please take your non-dominant hand and mark that dot in space again. Maybe kiss your fingers and thumbs and say, I'm not going to bash you this time. I'm going to be much kinder to you. Create that dot in space in front of you. And your other hand, your writing, drawing hand, this time when it's intersecting the dot, lift it a little higher so it doesn't bash into the dot. It goes a little higher. It expands above it. And arc around and down and around and up. And this time, rather than passing through the dot or even the pathway it just created, go a little higher. And then down and around and up. And this time, go even a little bit higher. And down and around and up. We're creating a spiral, if you haven't noticed. Go even higher. Down, around, and up. And go even higher. And you'll keep repeating this until your moving arm is so stretched it can't create a bigger spiral. And at that point, imagine, just imagining it continuing, creating potentially an infinite spiral. We're creating a system that expands and opens to let new energy in. Absolutely huge paradigm shifting concept. And we're modeling it with our arms. Continue that as long as you're intrigued, inspired, or curious. And whenever you feel ready to, shake out your arms and relax them. Widening the circle. What do you notice? You're no longer creating a locked-in, continuous regurgitation of pain and suffering and non-resolution. You are creating a spiral. A spiral which expands and expands and expands, continuously increasing its vantage, its access to more substantive resources and beyond. We're going to explore this concept in depth through the run of this course. This, the spiral, is you demonstrating to yourself the essence of your commission to ego. Commission to the new upgraded model of ego is essentially ego lifting out of containment into a new vantage, a new perspective, higher as it were, more inclusive, to a level above and beyond where the challenge or the crisis is evidently playing out. Imagine again looking down from a bird's eye view or from an airplane or the branch of a tree. This is you from a higher, more inclusive bird's eye view vantage of consciousness. Ego can actually tap into solutions, long-lasting, enduring, real and tangible solutions. All solutions, so-called solutions, created from the same level of thinking at which a problem exists are band-aids. They're temporary. They're like dams across a flooding river. They only last so long. And the energy cost of keeping them in place can be enormous. They're not transformative solutions. They don't affect the end of suffering. They merely diminish it for some. Ponder for this for a moment because it's huge. This is our reality unless we shift up. Unless we shift up, we never affect long-lasting, real, penetrating relief. We merely temporarily postpone it for a few. In the course of this 7-session course, we're going to actively explore step by step how to lift you to a higher vantage from which you can and will begin to perceive real solutions for yourself, solutions which are so inspiring and energizing and truly make a difference in your life and beyond. And as you explore these actual solutions in your own life, as your very own practice ground, as your own life laboratory, as Gandhi did, you will naturally, without even thinking about it, begin to demonstrate to others how to lift themselves to higher ground as well. It's just what happens. It's how we model. Facetious question, rhetorical question, does this interest you? In what ways does this appeal to you? How does it inspire you? Imagine yourself now spiraling high as an eagle, free as a bird, glancing down above the suffering of the world, free from it. I'd like to tell you a story to illustrate this. It's based on a real story, and it's a bit magical the way I'll describe it. So imagine, you can imagine me as I describe this, or you can imagine you are me, yeah? Personalize it if you choose. Imagine walking a forest path, and it's such a beautiful day. Perhaps it's a path you've walked before, you're very familiar with it, you're very comfortable on it, and you're so enjoying it, you're so absorbed in the senses and the beauty. You hear a bird sing, and as you're walking along the path, you turn your head and you cock your head to hear, where is that bird singing from? Where's the bird in the tree? And you smell aromas, and perhaps you bend down and you smell for, where is that in the grasses or the branch of the trees or the flowers, the blossoms? And the sun streaming in through the leaves of the trees, and you're just absolutely in awe. As you're walking along this path, you are so enjoying the splendors and the beauty. And then you realize you've been walking for a while and the path has become obscured. And you keep walking for a bit because you think you know where you are and you're enjoying the light and the bird calls, etc. And then at some point you realize you look behind you and the path is so obscured, you're lost. Same forest, different scenario. This time, you're flying above it, maybe in a little two-seater plane or magically on the back of an eagle or flying in a paraglider or however, you're above this forest. And it's so obvious looking down. You can see, well, there's the path through the meadow, but then, yeah, it becomes obscured, but no big deal. Just go through where it's mossy there and a bit of rocks, and then you come beside the creek. And it's so easy, those stepping stones along the creek and across it, it's so easy to ford the creek right over there. And then no big deal there's a cliff, because can you see those natural stone steps up the side of the cliff? And you're up the top of the cliff and the view. That's the bird's eye view vantage. That's the vantage of soul. The aspect of you that can get lost is ego, a smaller part of you. The part of you that never gets lost, is never confused, never feels alone. That soul. Would you like to gain personal direct access to your own soul's vantage? This is one of the many things I wish was taught and mentored in. This is my way of saying, I wish it was taught in kindergarten. I wish this was maintained and fortified intact in all of us at a very young age and never lost. Where you know for yourself without a shadow of a doubt precisely what to do and how to lift yourself into joy, into peace, into generosity and benevolence all the time. This is essentially what we'll discover and explore and practice in the 7-session Be the Wave of Change series. There's a valuable question to ask, because what we're actually doing in getting ourselves into the exploration of the 7-week series is we're getting our ego willing. So a really great ego to question to ask is, what's in it for you? Why would you want to reintegrate your ego into your soul? And you're going to understand more what those words mean as we go along tonight and in future sessions. Let's take stock for a moment. You can reflect on this, or you can write with pen and paper, whichever you choose, an inventory of the ways, this is the unpleasant list, so that we've got something to spring off of, not to wallow in, just to create an inventory of the ways in which you're personally experiencing suffering in your own life now. Worry, confusion as possibilities, mental anguish, emotional turmoil, physical discomfort, distracting pain, anxiety, overwhelm, spiritual confusion, feeling lost. And then the essential question reiterated, do you truly believe that you need to continue this suffering? It only is possible when you're trapped in the paradigm of ego, commission one. Do you truly believe you need to endure it? Is it a penance for something? What if you could invite your ego and you could teach it how to rise up to a higher vantage? to extricate itself from duality and re-enter unity, the very real experience of what that is, a vantage from which the downward magnetic pull of hell cannot touch it. That's essentially what we're mapping and learning how to do and tutoring ourselves in this 7-week series. There's another equally important question to ask. Who else benefits? Take a moment to reflect on this precious question. Who else benefits when you are happy, relaxed, confident, more peaceful, more present, more joyous, more energized, more willing, more creative, more positive, more helpful, more generous, more loving, more kind? Who else benefits when you're suffering less, when you're more in joy? Who else benefits when you have more energy available to focus and to share yourself in ways that inspire you, sharing your beauty and your magnificence with the world around you? Who else benefits as you climb up to a higher vantage from which you can gain access to clarity, confidence, inspiration, joy, and ease? Who else benefits? You are a pebble in the center of a pond. When you focus on yourself alone, this is you, me, anybody, you create a very small ripple. When you focus on healing yourself, caring for yourself, repairing yourself, respect as examples, freeing yourself from suffering, because of what this will positively affect for others, you tap into enough rocket fuel to propel yourself out of hell. We'll explore this concept more as we go along. Without this propulsion, this inner momentum, you can easily stay stuck. I want to share with you briefly a story of how I personally discovered this. I mentioned earlier when I was describing a little bit of my life story, a period of time that I call seclusion. And in it, I was in a deeply meditative state for 7.5 months. And one of many insights that was sort of plopped down into me was what I now call the wake, W-A-K-E. And what I realized early in this deeply transformative phase of my life was that the more I heal myself, my own self-respect, the more I clean out my past, digest my past experiences, and we'll go deeply into what that means and practice it in the course of this course, the more I create a wake for others to follow in. So a wake, if you've ever seen, if not imagine this, a body of water, let's imagine it's still, a still lake. And let's say a canoe or a rowboat, a slow-moving vessel, is moving through that lake, or a bird, a duck perhaps. Have you ever looked behind that canoe or rowboat or duck to see how the water ripples outward? It creates this widening V behind it. And if you pay attention, you'll notice the essence, the nature of that V is calm. The bird, the boat, is creating a path through which it's easier for others to pass behind it. The more we focus on our own awakening, and in this case I specifically mean mapping the route to lift our ego up into the vantage of our soul, the more we create a wake for it to be easier for others to do this as well. So what I like to do, since you've really got the gist, we've got enough context now, I'd like to share with you one more simple story to set the stage, and then we're going to go into some content. How do we actually do this? We're going to begin this tonight, and we're going to go deeply into this in the subsequent 6 sessions in this 7-session series. I'd like to tell you one more brief story, and it's about the Vancouver Peace March. In 1992, when I came back from Brazil and the original UN Earth Summit to where I lived at the time in Vancouver, I met a lot of leaders of organizations in different areas of focus and passion, and one of them happened to be one of the co-founders of the Vancouver Peace March. Apparently, the Vancouver Peace March was one of, if not the largest peace marches at some time. I'm assuming peace marches began in response to the Vietnam War. They were long-standing. I don't believe they still happen in Vancouver, but who's to know? They happen when they do. They used to be annual, huge marches. And when I met one of the co-founders, it was a woman, we sat and we had tea one day, and I was sharing with her the nature of my work at the time, which was a foundation for what we're describing tonight and exploring. She said to me, Ariel, she said, what you're doing is so much more challenging than what we're doing. We're fighting against what we don't like. What you're doing is endeavoring to map a route out of what we don't like into what we actually want. Thank you. That is essentially what we're doing in this course. Together, collectively, we're mapping a route to what we do want. And we've all got ways to describe it with our own adjectives, and there's a lot of commonality between those. So you're beginning to get a glimpse, a sense of how it's possible to lift your ego into commission too. I'm going to make this map very experiential and clear as we go along. And how you can be free of confusion, fear, and instead be a vibrant contributor to keywords, a tipping point on a planetary scale to a sigh of relief, of joy, of ease right now. This is what we're truly in the midst of. An upshift, a quantum shift in humanity, literally as a species. So let's enter into a bit of a content. How do we actually do this? Let's whet our appetite tonight. We're going to go so deeply into this experientially in the next six sessions. But for now, let's have a really delicious taste of this. So let's rephrase the three keys, because this is essentially our roadmap for the remainder of our session tonight and the next 6 weeks. And I'm going to give you very tangible, practical, experiential discovery of how to do these three steps, yourself and us together as a community. The first is to teach your ego how to recognize your soul. We're going to get into that this evening, so that your ego can orient itself towards your soul. The second is to release your undigested past. That's going to make a whole lot of sense in future sessions. And the third is to learn how to climb the ladder of consciousness, so essentially you become immune to the downward spiraling pull, and in its place you experience with greater and greater frequency what I call the incredible lightness of being. You exit duality and you enter unity. And it's not just a concept, you actually begin to experience it. That's the new prototype of human. That's ego in commission too. So I'd like to assist you to begin, or for those of you who already have got a sense of this, to fortify your ability to distinguish when your soul is predominant and when your ego is predominant. So just relaxing, I'm going to, in a meditative way, guide you to recognize, vision, the world as soul. Close your eyes if they aren't already, and breathe a deep sigh, and come along with me. Light, bright light, and multi-colors in it, all the colors of the rainbow, and all the hues between the hues, all the colors, are harmoniously playing together. Joy, pure, uncontained joy. Children playing, laughing. Everyone playing, laughing, as if they are children. Plenty. No want. No lack. Plenitude of everything. And yet no greed, no hoarding. No one with exceptionally more than any other. All have. All have everything they need and everything they truly want. Love. Love is like a soft cotton wispy cloud that wafts in and around everything. Love is everywhere. Everything is created of love. Love is the essence of all that is. Peace. There's no shouting, no crying, no pain, no remorse. There is absolute tranquility, absolute harmony among things. And yet, it is so vibrant. There is so much life, creativity and play and innovation, with an always eye to the whole and what benefits the whole. This is the modus operandi of this place. It is a totality of oneness, of love, of caring, of generosity, of creativity, of expansiveness. Everyone is included. Everyone is loved. Everyone is love. The world is ego, derision, divisiveness, tension, fear, tolerance and intolerance, give and take more and less. There is less. Somehow there is less here. as if it's tight and closed and suffocating. Not enough, never enough. Less air, less food, less light, more dark. Shadow, lurking, fear, not sure. Paranoia, hoarding, skepticism, greed. Power over, just to be sure, power over. No chances taken, no faith. Tight, limiting, scarce, fleeting, love. I certainly don't want to leave you there. Let's go into the world as soul again. And this time, notice even more keenly the juxtaposition, the distinction. Vision, the world as soul. Breathe a deep sigh and come along with me. Light, bright light, and multicolors in it. All the colors of the rainbow and all the hues between the hues. All the colors and harmoniously playing together. Joy, pure, uncontained joy. Children playing, laughing, everyone playing, laughing, as if they are children. Plenty, no want, no lack. Plenitude of everything, and yet no greed, no hoarding. No one with exceptionally more than any other. All have. All have everything they need and everything they truly want. Love. Love is like a soft, cotton, wispy cloud that wafts in and around everything. Love is everywhere. Everything is created of love. Love is the essence of all that is. Peace. There is no shouting, no crying, no pain, no remorse. There is absolute tranquility, absolute harmony among things. And yet it is so vibrant. There is so much life. Creativity and play and innovation with an always eye to the whole and what benefits the whole. This is the modus operandi of this place. It is a totality of oneness, of love, of caring, of generosity, of creativity, of expansiveness. Everyone is included. Everyone is loved. Everyone is love. When I was a child, I asked a question a lot of children ask a lot, which is why. But there was something in me, and it may be the root of the question all children ask, which is that it doesn't have to be this way. And I started actually vocalizing that. It doesn't have to be this way. And I remember as a child in early teen years, and occasionally people would call me an idealist. And I just knew inside of me, no, that's not what it is. And eventually I had words to describe the truth that I was tuning into. And I call it the forgotten reality. The forgotten reality. Unity. The world of soul. And so a key distinction, it's the first of our three keys in this course, is teaching our ego how to recognize our soul. We're going to go into this much more deeply in our next session. A lot more ways to discern it. But for now, it's only when we notice when our ego is predominant that we can redirect it to our soul. It's only when our ego falls away from soul, which is our embodiment of divinity, our own personal version of divinity by whatever name you choose to give it. It's only when our soul falls, or rather our ego falls away from soul and forgets its bigger aspect, that we can suffer. Only ego spirals down. Soul doesn't spiral down. It's beyond that. It's not possible for soul to experience dis-anything, disharmony, discomfort, discord, dis-ease. We're going to go into that more in our next session, but for now, for this evening, as your touchstone, your leaping point, your leap-off point, to start to focus on distinctions of ego and soul. When am I in what that world of soul vision describes? The expansiveness, the joy, the love, the peace. When am I in that tight, contractive space? What my reading, my description, the world of soul, of rather the world of ego describes, discerning and differentiating. So here's a key question to contemplate between now and our next session. How do you know when your ego is predominant? And how do you recognize when your soul is predominant? Start to sit with, to contemplate that seed question. And I'll give you all 4 to 5 very simple ways to make that distinction in our next session and sessions. How do you know? How do you identify? What brings your awareness to realize, to recognize when your ego, your limited self, is predominant? And what are the signals? How do you know when your soul is predominant? Start with that seed question. And remember forest paths as an example. Getting lost in the woods is an analogy of being in an ego-predominant state and having vantage flying above the forest and seeing, well, no problem that the trail is overgrown. This is how you get through the forest, to the clearing, along the river, across the creek, and up the rock wall to that incredible vantage. The soul can see all of that. We're going to go into that more in future sessions. So an inventory, to make this really easy, inventories are really great ways to get clarity. So an inventory that you might explore, and I'm going to set it now as a suggestion. And by the way, after the session tonight, for those of you live on the call, and after every session, within a day or so, you'll receive a couple things from me. One is a way to listen to the recording of the session, details of how to do that. And the other is what I call home play, inquiries and practices, to assist you to go deeper in exploring the concepts and the content that I'm presenting to you, that we're exploring together in these sessions. So an inventory of physical, emotional, and mental signals of when you're experiencing soul predominance, when you're experiencing ego predominance. As examples, soul, physical, emotional, mental signals include love, being in the state of love, experiencing freedom, peace, confidence, clarity, ease, presence, joy. Essentially, anything expansive is a signal that you're in soul predominance. Anything that is contractive is a signal you're in ego predominance. So as examples, fear, confusion, discomfort, dis-ease, disturbance, dissonance, distraction, dis-anything is a signal that ego commission one is grappling, it's struggling, it's suffering. When you're suffering, mildly, medium, extreme, ego is predominant. It's asking for help, and that's what we're learning in this course, how to help ego get out of suffering, how to reposition yourself in a soul, essentially. So another piece, a suggestion for you to redo, and I'm going to suggest you do it daily, I will do it daily between now and our next call, is kinesthetically create those two models again, the wheel of time, one hand bashing into the dot in space over and over, trying to find solutions on the same level of thinking they were created on, the same level the problem exists on, and then shake out your hands, whoo, that's not the one I want. Maybe just do that once more so you get the point of it. And then start practicing the spiral, where every time your moving arm comes around, it goes a little further out, more expansive. And the next time a little further out, you're creating a spiral, modeling a spiral with your hands in space. So your body is taking in, you're embodying this wisdom. You're really getting the concept. So let's go one more step tonight, just a little bit more, to help you begin to distinguish between your ego and the soul, the launching place for our next 6 weeks. And it's to explore a little bit what I call active intuition. In the Power of Intuition course, I go into this in much greater detail. What I call active intuition. And for simplicity for this session tonight, it's recognizing when we're stuck. Recognizing when we're experiencing, we're feeling confusion, overwhelm, fatigue, resistance, anxiety, worry, and pausing. Stepping back, unhooking from the level on which the so-called problem exists. One of my most effective ways to do this, and you may find what I'm about to describe works really effectively for you, and you might find you have your own better version. I've been doing this since 1988, when I intuitively was guided to begin to do this. I literally lie down. I can do it now standing, walking. I can do it in a lot of positions. I can do it in public now. But initially, I had to lie down, and I tend to lie down on a hard surface, so a floor. Even a bed that's cushioned doesn't allow my body to relax enough. So the lying down, for me, is so that my body can go into the deepest state of relaxation possible. And there's a key in this. I won't say much more so I don't overload you with this, but when the body is relaxed, the ego can relax. It doesn't need to be hypervigilant, looking out for your well-being. When you take your body intentionally into states of relaxation, inherently, immediately, your ego relaxes. We're going to go into this in more detail in future sessions, because your ego's predominant job is to ensure your safety, your well-being, your orientation. When you're relaxed, ego has done its job. It can come down from the watchtower, so to speak. It doesn't need to be hypervigilant. It can allow you to go into deeper states of awareness and insight, deeper states of consciousness. So, to reiterate, when you notice you are in downward spiraling hell, you're in ego commission one territory. Ego is grappling. Step back, unhook from that level. Here's how I do it. I lie down, deeply relax my body, and I ask for higher vantage. I ask for understanding. I ask to be given a bird's eye view of what is taking place. And if there is a response, I am to have an effective, constructive way to respond to what's taking place. What is it? And there is no reason why this should be any different for you than it is for me. I get insight. When I stop bashing into the problem, perpetuating it or assuming the solution is where the problem exists, when I step back, I unhook from that level, and I lie down and I ask for higher vantage understanding. What is taking place? What's going on? And if I'm to respond, how constructively? I always get insight. So I'm going to recommend you play around with that, you explore that. We could go on, but let's not. Let's call it that for a night. What we will do, what we've done tonight essentially, is create a context of the territory we're exploring in the seven-week series. What we will do for the next seven sessions is really jump in and actively explore the three keys. More keenly you will become aware to recognize in any given moment, is your ego predominant or is your soul predominant? And you will begin to direct your ego to your soul, realign it, reunify them. More on that. We will learn in subsequent sessions how to release your undigested past so there's nothing to pull you into downward spiral again. That's a process. I'm going to give you a very clear understanding and some very simple, very effective tools. And I will introduce you to a ladder of consciousness, and I will give you very simple ways to reposition yourself higher up on that ladder of consciousness so you essentially become immune to the lower spirals, the downward spirals of experience. And as I've said a couple times this evening, with increasing frequency, you will experience the incredible lightness of being. You will climb up into the incredible vantage of soul. With practice, you will actually reabsorb your ego into your soul. More will be understood on that by our next session. So what I'd like to do, I always do this in any one-to-one leadership coaching sessions, in exploration sessions like this, to assist you to integrate the incredible territory that we've begun to explore this evening, and your mind may be spinning, ego mind may be spinning, soul knows this all. I'm just helping you remember some things you may have forgotten, get new vantages on things. Before we complete, this is a synthesis question, helping you integrate. I'd like to ask you to reflect on what are your personal highlights from what we've begun to explore this evening. What are some of your personal highlights? What's really stood out? What's really jumped out? What's affirmed something you've always felt is true? It's validated something you've known or been experiencing? It's been absolutely refreshing and enlightening, new, you've never thought of this before. What are your personal highlights from what we've begun to explore this evening? And perhaps what is the most valuable awareness you've gained? What's the most valuable, if there is one, maybe there's not. What is the most valuable awareness you've gained? So between now and our next session, those of us on the live call, it will literally be a week from now. A lot of what I've shared with you this evening is going to follow you around. You'll experience that whatever way you do, but it's going to follow you around. And I'm going to encourage you to look at, those of you on the live call, you'll receive it in an email format. to look at the questions that I'm going to give you for suggested contemplation and the activities I'm going to give you for suggested exploration to help you continue to dig into these concepts and like Gandhi, like Einstein, explore them in your own laboratory of life. So that when we come together a week from now, we can go deeper, wider into lifting our egos into our souls, clearing out our pasts, and climbing the ladder of consciousness. I'm so thrilled to be sharing this journey with you. This is such an incredible experience. I've been practicing and mapping this territory for a couple of years now. It is a phenomenal journey, and I'm so glad that you're joining me in exploring this. So we'll officially end the call for tonight, and I very much look forward to your presence again a week from now.